We're doing Pirkei Avot in our class on the Jewish home. We're up to the second chapter, the second Mishnah. And the first Mishnah was a quote from Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. And now we're going on to the next generation, Rabban Gamliel, his son. Here you see that generations after Rabbi also got into the Mishnah, right? We say Rabbi compiled the Mishnah. And Rashi automatically points out in Baba Metzia, V'acharem lo'osifu ki'im me'at. There are only a few additions after Rebbe. But we do find additions. Here's a prime example. Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, says this Mishnah. So you could say he said it in his father's lifetime, and his father incorporated it in the Mishnah. But then we find Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, Rabbi Yehuda's grandson, who's incorporated in the Mishnah, and the Talmud overtly tells us in Avodah Zarah that that was stuck into the Talmud, stuck into the Mishnah after Rebbe's passing. So if we see that some Mishnahs make it into the Mishnah after Rebbe's passing, we don't have to work too hard and say, this Mishnah was really said earlier. Maybe it was said after Rebbe passed away. We know that there were additions to the Mishnah after Rebbe's passing. So Rabban Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, and you'll notice that in the dynasty from Hillel through his offsprings, you find the names going back and forth between Hillel and Shimon and Gamliel, and Gamliel, Shimon, and Yehuda, each one called after the grandfather. Hillel had a son named Shimon, who had a son named Gamliel, who had a son named Shimon, who had a son named Gamliel, etc. To Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, to Rabban Gamliel, kept going back and forth. The Medrash says the earlier generations had prophecy, so they'd name their children after what's going on or what was going to happen in the world. We don't have prophecy, so we name our children after their grandparents. You don't have to name after an uncle. He's not a descendant of the uncle, right? He's a descendant of a grandparent or a great-grandparent. There is the point that if he has grandparents who are okay people, we name the child after the people who were his progenitors. So Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, says, Yafe Talmud Torah in Derech Eretz. It's nice. The word Yafe means it's nice. It's beautiful. The learning of Torah, together with Derech Eretz, with work, with business, something like that. Shegiat Shenehem Mishakachat Avon. Because when you're busy doing both of them, then sin is hard to find. V'chol Torah She'enim Melacha. And any Torah that does not have work with it, Sofa B'teila, ultimately it will be undone. V'goreret Avon. And drags along sin with it. So, we're pausing midway through the Mishnah, just because there's much to say here. So, Torah, together with work. Torah, that's where we invest our strength. And work is where we invest our body. And then at the end of the day, a guy is tired both intellectually, both his strength and his body. He's physically drenched. And then he'll go to sleep and have a good night's rest, and he'll get up tomorrow and be productive again. But if a guy is sitting in yeshiva all day, and he's learning, and he's not doing anything that's physically strenuous, and then when the night comes, he has to let his mind rest, but his body isn't so tired. So he's not falling asleep so fast. And then his body, that hasn't been working so hard, well, his thoughts start wandering to places they shouldn't be yet. The truth is that the Mishnah, in order to understand this Mishnah, we also have to see a key word in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, any Torah that does not have work with it, sofa b'teila, will ultimately be undone. The Mishnah purposely says sofa in the end. It's very common that people get married, and he's learning, and she has a job on the side, and they make ends meet. So they figure, we can make ends meet, this is great, I'm going to continue learning, everything's perfect, everything's beautiful. And then comes child number one, and they start realizing, hey, wait a second, diapers, formula, gun, but they can still make ends meet. And then comes child number two. And then they're already very hard pressed. And when the children start growing older, and there are other expenses, then they're really hard pressed. And then they start saying, okay, we got to do other things. And then, if they haven't planned in advance, if they haven't prepared themselves, so then their options are very limited. So you don't have to be a millionaire. You do need to put bread on the table. You don't have to live in the expensive neighborhood of Kiryat Moshe and Givat Shaul. You could live in a cheaper neighborhood. But at the end of the day, there still are basic expenses that a person has to cover. And the Mishnah warns us, Sofa betela, ultimately it's going to be undone. You could manage for a while, but then when things build up, the question is, where is the person going to find himself? The Rambam tells us, a wise person prepares himself beforehand. In the Rambam's time, he says he gets a piece of land, he gets an ox, then he gets married when he has a house and a piece of land, and he has an income, and he works things out. So in our day and age, it's very hard to have a normal income before you get married. Maybe when you're Chozer B'tshuva and you already have a doctorate under your belt, and then you discover Judaism and you have everything else, and you're 45, and then you think about marriage, okay, then you could do it. But today, where getting a degree usually takes you till you're about 25 or 28, it's not so practical for a person to say, okay, I'm going to wait till I'm 28, then I'll start dating. It's not practical. He's not going to live a correct life that way. A person does have to get married, but a person also has to think long term. Just because right now he can make ends meet, a person has to be realistic and ask himself, what's going to be down the road? And when a person is not realistic, very often he misleads himself and says, this is emunah. I'm a believer. So I'll ask the person, are you a believer in other areas of your life? Because my tradition from my rabbis is that we're not on that level of being believers. We do buy medical insurance, we do buy health insurance, and we should figure out a way that we can support ourselves in the long run. The Talmud tells us, you want to know who's a believer? You want to know who's a non-believer? The Talmud says, a person who doesn't believe is someone who has bread for today and asks himself, what am I going to eat tomorrow? So one of my teachers told me, yes, and we're all non-believers. Anyone who lives like that is kidding himself. We're not on that level today. A person can't say, well, I have bread for today, I'm not worried about tomorrow. We're not on that level. We don't do anything else on that level. In the days of the Talmud, you had people on that level. One of the Amoraim was lying on his deathbed, and they told him he had a small measurement of spices in his cabinet. And he said, oh, what a waste. He was on that level. He never had anything more than he needed. So if he's lying on his deathbed and he had a little bit extra mustard, so he's thinking, what a waste. I worked for that mustard. What did I have to work for that mustard for? You know, by us, come on, you go to the store. You tell yourself, the ketchup's on sale. I'm going to buy 6 ketchups. Right? We do everything. We do everything long term. So we're not on that level. We don't do anything on that level. We shouldn't kid ourselves. And being that we're not on that level, so we also have to be practical about how we're going to support ourselves long term. The Mishnah warns us, Sofa b'teila. Ultimately your Torah is going to be undone. Because in the beginning you're going to think it's working. In the beginning you're going to say, no, how much expenses do I have? How much do I need? Ask yourself, are you going to live on bread and margarine for you and your kids? Are you going to want to give them a tomato? Chances are you will. Chances are you're going to feel I'm not giving them enough. Are you going to send them to public school, or are you going to want to send them to a school that has better Torah learning? Chances are you're going to want to send them to a better school than the public school. Are you going to want to enrich them in the afternoon? Are you going to want them to have one pair of clothing, or are you going to want more clothing? Well, clothing is expensive. Are you going to use the same diapers over and over again and hand wash them, or are you going to get disposable diapers? Well, you're going to get disposable diapers, I'm pretty sure. And all of these are expenses. You can't kid yourself and say, I'm managing today. God will bless you, Bezat Hashem. You'll have kids. Your expenses will go up. And Chacham Einav Bilshon, an intelligent person thinks in advance. So yes, we have to have Torah a major part of our life. And yes, we don't have to live on the highest standard. But we also have to have a source of income which we could live off of. Chazal say one of the responsibilities of a parent is to teach his son a trade, something he could live off of. So if the guy knows how to drive and he could be a taxi driver, he is not going to live in the lap of luxury, but at the end of the day, that's a livelihood. When my father taught us how to drive, he used to tell us, I just did the mitzvah of giving you a parnasa. Worst case scenario, you could be a taxi driver. And my parents sent us to college. But it's interesting because the Talmud says once you taught your kid one trade, teaching him the second trade isn't the mitzvah. I shouldn't tell my father that, right? that's what the Talmud says. The Talmud says if a father hits his kid while he's teaching him, that's called he's busy with a mitzvah. In their day and age, part of education was hitting a kid. Today it's different. So the Talmud says, but what if he's hitting him when he's teaching him the second trade? And the Talmud says, that's no mitzvah. Who said he has to teach him the second trade? Don't get into this issue with him. He's got one trade, you did your mitzvah. So Rabbi Gamliel warns us, you want to know what's nice? Torah with a livelihood on the side. And a person has to be realistic. And the truth is that some people can learn all day, but for many people, they're more productive in their learning also if they have a few hours a day where they're doing something to make a livelihood. Most people need to have something on the side. It's unnatural for a person to live a lifestyle where he's getting supported by other people. And it's very difficult. If a person is cut out for that and he can succeed in learning Torah, he's doing the Jewish people the greatest service if he finds the wife who wants to do it with him and he's learning Torah all day, and ultimately that Torah will support the Jewish people, and it's the future of the Jewish people. And then a person has a certain challenge because he's living a lifestyle which is very unnatural, meaning it's not easy. Sometimes a person has to force himself. A guy can come to Machon Meir and say, it's unnatural for me to be supported by others, so, okay, I'm here for 2 weeks, now I'm going to go work. That's not right either. Sometimes a person has to force himself and tell himself, yes, it's unnatural, it's tough, it's not what I want to do, but at the end of the day, it's the best investment. And sometimes I have to do things like that. Sometimes I have to enter such a scenario. If a wife says, I want to support my husband, there are many women who are like that, and they say, I want my husband to learn Torah, and I have a good job, and so long as we can, we'll make it work that way. That's unnatural. I don't think there's any healthy husband that feels good about a situation like that. But sometimes a person says, you know what? This is the future of the Jewish people. And even though it's not easy for me, I'm going to do it. And sometimes a person has to realize, this is my future. We had many couples here in Machon Meir who started out where the husband was learning and the wife was working and supporting. No one says it's easy. No one says it's fun. But at the end of the day, their house looks different and their whole future is different. And when a person takes the time to really study Torah, and both sides of the couple are happy about it, the husband and the wife, then they're both gaining from it. It's not easy. It does take a certain adjusting from what would be a normal family life. But at the end of the day, everyone gains from it if that's their decision. Now there's a point that everyone has to know, those of you who are contemplating this route of having a wife that's going to be the primary breadwinner, and that is the concept of who does the responsibility of parnasa lie on? Meaning, when you get married, you sign a document called a ksuba. And what the ksuba is that's the document that enlists what are your responsibilities to the marriage. And one of the things it says in the ksuba is, the ana efloch, and I will work, the ezon, and feed, the afanes, and support, the kir yatichi, and I will cherish, I will honor you, and I back this document to the point of migilimayif dalktefayif, till the shirt off my back. It says that in the ksuba. You're signing a document in which you're saying, I'm marrying you, and I'm taking the responsibility of parnasa, down to the shirt off my back. That's what you're saying. So here you have a kollel couple. She's going to be working, and he's saying, down to the shirt off my back. Sometimes that's the understanding they have, and fine, no problem. Usually, even where that is the understanding that they have, in order for it to work, and this can happen also in a couple where they're both working, but she's making a much bigger income than he is, there's a concept that must be there within the home in order for it to work well, in order for her to be happy. And that is that she has to have the feeling that he's taking the responsibility of the parnasa on his shoulders. Meaning, even though she's making the money, she has to feel like, if I lose my job, I don't have to be up at nights, he's going to be up at nights. Because at the end of the day, it's his responsibility. A woman could do it for 30 years and be happy about it, but she has to feel that it's not on her shoulders, it's on his shoulders. She's doing it, and so long as it works, everything's great. But if she loses her job, she's not going to be up at night, he's going to be up at night. And that's a feeling that a husband has to have, and he has to convey to his wife. He has to recognize that's his responsibility, and he has to convey that to her. And then she could be much happier doing it. When a woman feels like, I married a guy who can't do anything, if I lose my job, we're all starving. We're losing the roof over our heads. That's pressure that's unnatural for the woman. Working out of the house has its level of being unnatural, and that can work. But working out of the house or having a job and having the pressure that she's the one that's responsible for putting bread on the table, that's too much. That's not right, in my opinion. Look, if you're the biggest tzaddik in the generation and you find the biggest tzaddikas in the generation, okay, we'll worry about that then. But right now, we're not yet there. We're working, maybe we'll get there, you know. But then you can mix everything I said here and go find another teacher, because I don't know how to teach tzaddikim. I'll tell you a true story. I once had a guy wanted me to teach him for his chasana. But he knew all of Shas by heart. So what do you tell a guy like that? I said to him, look, I don't know Shas by heart. I can't, I'm used to teaching people who are normal. You're not. You're a genius. You know, this is a guy who at age 13 was writing letters to rabbis who wrote responses, writing them comments, what he thought of their response. Like, well, you missed this, you missed that. Genius, right? So when he got engaged, we're related through marriage. Through marriage, like a distant relation. But we're friendly. He used to come to Merkaz Rav, that's one of the best libraries in the country. So he used to come there to see all the books. So we got friendly. So when he got engaged, he wanted me to learn with him, preparing for the chasana. And I said, I can't. You got to find someone bigger. I don't know how to teach a guy on your level. I made a mistake. He got divorced a year and a half later. I should have taught him. I should have taught him like I teach every chasana. But I felt, you know, a guy on his level, what am I going to tell him? I'm going to tell him this point. Maybe he's marrying the biggest tzaddikas in the world. And maybe she, for him and her, this isn't what's right. So I don't know. I don't know. You know, he had other people teach him. It's their responsibility, not mine. You know, okay. Fine, but at the end of the day, there are exceptions. For us, I think this is the correct general rule. It's a partnership, marriage. But the wife has to have the feeling that when it comes to the parnasa, even if she's the prime breadwinner, you're taking the responsibility. Rabbi Gamliel continues and says, V'chol ha'amelim im ha'tzibur. And all those people who are working hard with the congregation, they're doing things for tzibur, for the klal, for the congregation. They're heading a soup kitchen. They're fundraising to free Pollard. They're doing things for the congregation. Yiyu ha'amelim imahem l'shem shamayim. When you do something for the public, so he warns us, you have to be careful that you're doing it really for the sake of heavens. Not so that everyone says, oh, he's such a great guy, and other things. Because the merits of the congregation is really going to help you to attain what you need to. And here there are different understandings. One understanding is they'll help you, their merits will help you succeed in doing whatever job you want to do. Another understanding is that their merits will help you, that you'll be able to do your parnasa in a more easy fashion. That you wanna run the soup kitchen, so God will help you on the other side. The merits of the people you help in your soup kitchen will help you, that you make your parnasa more easily. V'tzidkatam omedet la'ad. And their righteousness will last forever. Ordinarily we say, you want to succeed, we said you need the balance of Torah together with work. But if instead of the work, you're investing more time in doing public things, so that also is physical work. So then your righteousness will last forever, even though you're not investing so much time in this balance of Torah and work. Meaning you want to work less and still be able to make it work, so work in public, work in helping the public. So there are again multiple understandings in this. We'll go with the Rambam, that the Rambam says that very often if you're dealing with the public, so you end up paying a price for it. You miss out on certain mitzvahs. You can't do every mitzvah. Sometimes you're running the soup kitchen and someone walks in and they tell you, I haven't eaten in 3 days, and you have to take care of getting them food, and you miss minyan. You don't make minyan, right? Sometimes you don't make minyan. You know, we once had a guy that went insane. Not in this yeshiva, different yeshiva. And I heard about it, and I heard he was running around naked in the streets of Tel Aviv. So I went to his friend's room and I said, you know, I just heard about this. Don't we have to get him and get him to an asylum? You know, he could hurt himself, he could hurt someone else. So the guy said yes. This was like 6:30 in the morning when I heard about it. So the guy said yes, and he's like rubbing his eyes. He says, let's talk in an hour, I got daven shachris. I said, no shachris. We got to deal with it. He said, but you know, Zman Kriya Shema is very early these days. I said, you put your tefillin in the bag, and we have a mitzvah to do right now. after we do the mitzvah, if you make Zman Kriya Shema Kod, and if not, not. This mitzvah comes first. You know, we've got to make sure the guy doesn't hurt himself and doesn't hurt anyone else. We have to know that if you're going to deal with mitzvahs, sometimes it's going to come at the expense of other things. And that's why the Tana concludes the Mishnah and says, Hashem says, I will consider it as though you've done your part, as though you've done the mitzvah. Ma'aleh ani alechem sachar, I will consider it when I have to factor in your wages, kilu asitim, as though you've done everything, all the mitzvahs that you couldn't do because you were busy with this. And this is a very interesting point. This is a point that applies more to women than men, but it applies to men also. Sometimes we have a certain feeling like, I didn't do everything. Now, if you analyze it, you couldn't have done it. If you'd really think about it honestly, you couldn't have done more than you did. And yet, you feel bad. I didn't do it. Like that story I told you when I was with my son in the hospital on Yom Kippur, and I couldn't go down with a minyan. I have to be there in the hospital room with him. So I couldn't go down with a minyan. But you feel bad. You tell yourself, you know, I missed minyan on Yom Kippur. I didn't down with a minyan on Yom Kippur. So logically, you tell yourself, but I didn't have a choice. I had to be here. But deep down inside, you feel bad. And the Mishnah promises us, if you do what's right, Hashem says, I consider it like you did what you had to do. But we have to know that by women, this feeling comes up even more than by men. Very often a woman will do something that's amazing. She'll do something that's above and beyond what can be expected. And afterwards she'll tell you, you know, I feel bad. And you ask, why do you feel bad? And she says, well, I wish I could have done more. I wish I could have done this. I wish I could have done that. She was out there saving someone's life. And then she comes back home. She says, you know, I feel bad. And you say, why do you feel bad? And she says, well, it was my mother's birthday, and I know she would have wanted me to be there. So the first thought is, well, I feel bad with her too, right? You know, her mother really would have wished she was there. You have to stop and tell yourself, no, that's not right. We did what was right here. We don't have to feel bad that we couldn't dance on every chasna in the world. I had to do what I had to do, and there's a price. Yeah, that's not me, that's God. God created me one human being who could do only one thing at a time. And husbands have to know to pause and show the wife their strengths. A woman is very good at seeing her own weaknesses, and very often she'll share them with her husband. And sometimes they're not even weaknesses, like here. Sometimes it's her strength. But a woman will kick herself because she can't be in 10 places at once. You know, she was with one kid at the doctor and she says, you know, but I missed the other kid's softball game. But you couldn't be in both places at once. You couldn't do better than that. And yet she'll still feel bad about it. And a good husband strengthens his wife's ego. A good husband shows his wife where she's positive, where she's good, and where she did what was right. And it's a point that is a female weakness. Women are very good at telling us what they're not good at. One of the common questions when I was more involved in shidduchim, I'd get this at least once a month, that a guy was dating a girl, and either the guy or the girl would call me up with the following line. The girl feels she's not good enough to be married to this guy. Funny that guys don't have this problem, right? But women have this tendency, and sometimes men are misled. You know, if your wife tells you often enough why she's not good, you don't stop and think, well, that's not true. She's so good, she just couldn't do better than that. And she wishes she could even do better than that. You start believing her. And then you start saying, well, yeah, gee, I wish she could do more. That's not right. It's not right. Your job is to stop and say, you know, you're really good. And deep down inside, that's what she wants to hear from you. You come home and your wife put the kids to bed and did the shopping and did the cooking and did the cleaning and called the parents and wished them a good Shabbos and did everything without you. And you walk in and she says, I wish I could have prepared you that dish that you really, really like. So the first thing you're going to think is, yeah, that would have been nice. Right? You have to be realistic and you have to say, wait a second. She did so much more than anyone else could have done. I couldn't have done half of what she did, but she's not going to tell you that. And your job as a husband is to stop and say, wait a second, you did so much. How could you be? Don't be sad. Look at how much you did. But believe me, your tendency is to go the other way. The human tendency is to stop and say, that would have been nice. Maybe next week, honey. Don't feel bad. Right? No. Am I right? 100%, right? He's married longer than I am. But, one of the things that a good husband does is he strengthens his wife's ego. Hashem says, when I look at you, I look at you and I say, you couldn't have done more, so as far as I'm concerned, you did everything. We have to know to emulate that. The truth is that very often, the way we talk is, in the end, it's the way we view things. A person who keeps saying to his wife, you know you're great, you know you're amazing, you know, I can't believe you did A, B, C, and D, the more you compliment your wife, the more you'll appreciate her. It's up to you. A person whose focus is on complimenting and showing how good the other side is, with time they'll see the other side positively. There was once a couple where the husband came to me and he had a whole long list of complaints. And he said, how do you stay married to a wife when you have this whole long list of complaints? I'll show you how. He said, okay, show me. I said, give me a list. He gives me a list, I tear it up. He says, what'd you do? I said, that's step number one. He said, I should show you. Yeah, that's step number one. So he said, okay, and what's step number two? Because I'm ready to rewrite. I said, step number two is start making a list of things to compliment her about. He said, but it's fake. I said, yeah, that's the problem with you. It's not a problem with her. But he said, but that list was real. You could have torn it up, but the list was real. Right, it's true. In every marriage, you can make a long list. And every day could have its own list. That's not what life is about. Life is about focusing on the positive. Seeing what can I say thank you about? What can I be positive about? Mishnah Gimel. The Mishnah warns us, Hevu zehirin barashut. Be careful with the authorities. Be careful with the politicians. In previous Mishnayot, we were warned, don't have anything to do with them. Stay away from them. But now the Mishnah is a continuation of the previous Mishnah. If you're trying to help the masses, then you're going to have to come in contact with politicians. You don't have a choice. So the Mishnah warns you, be careful with politicians. She'en mekalvin lo la'adam ela letzorech atzman. They only bring a person close for their own benefit. They're only nice to you. They only befriend you and they think they could gain from it. They seem like they like you. They seem like they love you when they benefit from it. But they don't stand by a person when he's in a time of need. So, simple reading of the Mishnah. Mishnah tells us, be careful. Politicians seem like they're your friends, but they're not. Let's notice a very interesting line in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nir'in ke'ovin. They seem like they like you. So the Mishnah is telling us, you want to know what's a person who seems like he likes you? And by default, we'll understand what's a person who really does like you. A person who seems like he likes you only seems that way when he benefits from it. And when you're in a time of need, he's not there for you. That's what the Mishnah defines. That's what's called seeming like you like someone. I would say that's Western marriage in the Western world. So long as she's beautiful and good looking and you have everything to gain from having her next to you, so then you're benefiting, so then you seem like you like her. But when suddenly she's an old hag and she's 55 and her face is drooping and you can't afford taking her for another treatment of plastic surgery, so you say goodbye, there are younger people out there. Nir'in ke'ovin, they seem like they like you. Yeah, sure. Bishatanatan, so long as you're getting something from it. I don't understand. You know, you guys are laughing. You know what they say? How that marriages in Hollywood change like the weather, right? So look around you. The Mishnah says you want to know what someone who seems like he likes you. That someone whose liking of you is when they benefit from it. And if you ask me, someone who only likes you when they gain from it, that's someone who seems like he likes you. That's not someone who really likes you. If you ask me, this is maybe the hardest point for people today, in our day and age. It's maybe the hardest point in marriages today. People don't know how to really love. People only know how to take. Could you imagine loving someone, being married to someone, where you're not benefiting from the marriage? Listen to what the Mishnah says. the most common claim that people have today for divorce is, I'm not getting anything out of this. I'm just putting in. Okay, no, that's what love's about. That's what the Mishnah says. That's the difference between do you love or do you seem like you love? If you really love, then you love even when you're not getting anything out of it. If you only seem like you love, if you're a politician, that you're only in it for your own good, yeah, that's when the relationship is only there, when I get something out of it. Isn't that what the Mishnah just told us? Nir'in ko'avin, he seems like he loves you, so long as he's benefiting from it. That's a politician, that's not real love. It's not a real relationship. How many times do people come and say, I'm not getting anything from this relationship? So, you know, my standard answer is, so right now is your opportunity to really love your spouse. Until now, you didn't love her, you loved yourself. Until now, all you did was take, because you were getting something from it. So now you feel like you're not getting anything from the relationship? Fine, so now begins love. Until now, you didn't love her, you loved yourself. You want love in a relationship? Love is about giving. Love is about those times where you feel you're getting nothing. You're only giving. That's the first moment of love. Most people, that's the first minute that the marriage is over, that they start contemplating divorce. The minute I stop getting out of this, why should I stay in this? What am I getting out of this? Look at the depth of the Mishnah. The en omdim lo la'adam b'shat tochko, and they don't stand by a person when he's in his tough state. When he's in his tough state. How many times do people say it's her fault? It's his fault. How many wives filed for divorce in the last decade because their husbands could no longer afford to give them the style that they were used to when they got married? There was a psychologist who left the United States and came here and said he's just too sick and tired of hearing women who say, I can't stay married to him. I got married to him with understanding. We'd live on a certain level, and he can't provide that anymore. I can't. What a foreign concept to Judaism. You know, and Judaism is just foreign to us. Yes, the halacha says a husband has a responsibility to give a person the lifestyle that she's accustomed to or better. Meaning if he can afford a better lifestyle, he should give her a better lifestyle. But not that she has claims if he can't make ends meet, so now there's no point in staying together. No. We say that's someone who seems like he loves you. That when you're in your time of need, they're not with you. We have a whole class that's a very, very morose, lugubrious, abject. Take a whole class with stories. I don't do this class anymore. There was once a class where I'd spend the first half hour of the class telling tragic stories. And then pose the question, how do you stay married to a person after they did something like that? One of the stories we mentioned earlier, I think... few weeks ago, the husband begs his wife not to take the kids without buckling them in, and every time he runs and buckles them in, and then one time he's not there, and she takes them without buckling them in, and a tragedy happens, and they lose two children. Now what? How do you stay married after that? The answer is, true love is standing by the person bishat dochko, at the time that they are in a dire state. True love is not about pointing a finger and saying, you did this to yourself. I've been telling you a million times. Guys, you get that? True love is when she did something that you told her a million times not to do, and then it blew up in her face, you don't say, I told you not to do it. So, the husband tells his wife, do me a favor. When you plug in the hot water for Shabbos, make sure the cord is high up so none of the kids can pull it down. And of course, every time he comes and puts it back. And then the one time that he doesn't come, the kid comes and pulls it and burns three quarters of his body. And the child is writhing in pain and is in the hospital and is never going to have the same skin again. And his whole life has changed. Now what? What do you do now? You know, these are stories that happen, unfortunately, a few times a year. When you guys get hot water in your home, you have to make sure you set it up in a way that nothing can happen. Not that you'll remember to do something. When you set up your hot water urns for Shabbos, and when you set up your plata, so you have to ensure that you set it up in a place and in a way that nothing bad can happen. Not that you'll always remember to put it in a way that it can't happen. Set it up in a place or a way where it can't happen. And if you can't do that, then don't set it up. Every year there are a few children that get burnt with most of their body. Some die and some don't. Every year. On Shabbos. So I'm telling you guys a practical tip. You have to think about it. True love, says the Mishnah, is someone who's there when he gets nothing out of it, and is there when the other side is in their time of distress and their time of need. And sometimes it can be the other side's fault. Hu haya omer, he used to say, Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, he used to say, Asei ritzono kirtzonecha, do his desire as though it were your desire. God's desire is that we learn Torah. What's our desire? That we do business. When a guy's doing business, when he's doing other things, he's very focused. When it comes to his learning Torah, a million things distracting him. Tells us the Mishnah, be focused on his desire as though you were doing your desire. And I thought to myself that maybe this Mishnah is the continuation of the previous Mishnah. Meaning the previous Mishnah told us about relationships with people in power who we hope will be there for us, and it says they won't be there for you. This Mishnah goes on to the one who's really in power. This is my own interpretation, but I think it really fits in. The Mishnah says, you want to have a relationship with the one who's really in power? Then do his desire as though it were your desire. Kadesh yasel tzumcha kiltzono. And then he'll do your desire as though it were his desire. But I think we here too, we could learn about relationships. We discussed many times that for a wife, connection revolves around speech. So for a wife, it's very important to talk to her husband. So you'll ask, so what do we talk about? And the answer is, it doesn't really matter. The most important thing is that we talk. If we talk, we're connected. So if we have something important to talk about, we'll talk about that. And if we don't have something important to talk about, well then it's still very important that we talk. So we'll talk about things that are not important. Because of this tendency, husbands have a tendency to drown out the wife. Because she's going to talk to him regardless, and from the minute he walks through the door till the minute he walks out the door, he can be fairly guaranteed that the second she has a free minute, they're going to be talking. And it does, and most of the time it's not so important. Half the time it's not relevant. It's just stories of what happened. So that's where the yes, dear, yes, dear, yes, dear comes in, right? He's reading the newspaper. She's talking. Yes, dear. Sure, dear. Whatever you say, dear. There's once a guy who his wife calls him, and he's in the middle of a conversation with his friend. So he answers the phone, and he says, sure, yeah. And he puts down the phone, and he continues talking to his friend. Every few minutes, he picks up the phone, he says, 100%, yeah. Puts it down for another few minutes. Yes, you're sure, yes, yes. It's a problem. Hashem tells us, with our relationship with Him, He says, be focused on Hashem's will as though it were your own will. One of the key points, if you want to succeed in a relationship with your spouse, is giving them the respect of being focused on what they say. And this isn't only with your spouse, it's also with your children. If you really want your children to feel like they have a connection to you, then when they come to talk to you, unplug the phone, shut the cell phone, take them to a situation where you're with them. How often do you shut your cell phone in life? Shut off your instant messages, emails, SMS. You're with this other person. It's one of the gifts of Shabbos. I strongly recommend you guys get used to napping on Fridays so that on Shabbos you could be with your kids. You could sit there and talk to them. If you walk into Shabbos because you came to a late Thursday night learning Torah, but you walk into Shabbos and you don't have the strength to be with your kids Friday night and Shabbos day, you're missing on the golden opportunity of being with your kids. No phones, no computer, just you and the family. It's the golden opportunity. One of the pieces of advice that I give every young couple, there are a few pieces of advice that every couple came back to me, almost every couple, and said, that was amazing. And this is one, I'm telling you guys now, one piece of advice that 99% of the couples told me was like made their first few months. The first 2 months you're married, you get home at night, shut your cell phones, disconnect the house phone. You could say from 6 o'clock onward, from 6:30 onward, whatever the time is, you come home, do it the first month. just 1 month. Unplug the phone. Just you two sit down for supper. No one else could call. Computers shut, cell phones shut. Get used to being together at night. Every couple I mentioned this to did it the first month, and then of their own accord did it another month or two. Did it for at least 3 months. And they all said it changed their lives. Bezrat Hashem, when you have children, so you're going to find it's a little harder to have time with your spouse where it's just the two of you. So I recommend going on dates. Get a babysitter. You could go out to a hotel over here. You'll have to have a cell phone probably, because today babysitters won't stay without having a cell phone. But maybe you could borrow a neighbor's cell phone. Or maybe you could get something else where no one could get you but the babysitter. Figure out a way to do it. It's very important that you take time where you're focused on one another in talk and speech. You'll be surprised how many couples live together and they live parallel lives. Well, they meet, they talk, but it's parallel lives. People live with their children and they live parallel lives. Hashem says, I want when you do my desire that you do it like your desire. Be focused. You're learning, focus on your learning. Don't have other things. And then Hashem says, I'll do your desire like my desire. Believe me, if you focus on what your wife wants, she'll be focused when you do. But it starts with you. And the same thing with your kids. If you show them the respect of being focused with what they want, they'll be focused with what you want too. That's not to say they won't be disobedient. Every child has to test his limits. If they're normal, they'll test their limits. But at the end of the day, they sense. It goes two ways. Batel ritzonecha mipenei ritzono. Annul your desire in the face of God's desire. Kedei sheyivatel ritzon acharim mipenei ritzonecha. So that Hashem will annul the will of others for the sake of your will. The Mishnah concludes, Hillel omer. Hillel teaches us, Al tifrosh min hatzibur. Don't separate yourself from the congregation. And here there are many levels to this piece of advice. Number one is that if there's a custom that everyone does, go like their custom. The Gemara says in Baba Metzia, you go to a city, go with their etiquette, go with their customs. So this is a very important point. Guys, very often when they're chozer b'tshuva, so their strength is that they can go against the tide. Everyone all around them led secular, non-Jewish lives, and they say, I'm going to do what's right. But that same strength, after you learn about Judaism, can become a weakness. Because then a person could be in the crowd, and everyone's doing things one way, and he says, but I don't care, I'm doing what I think is right. That was his strength up until now, that's what got him this far. But then there comes a point where you have to become part of Am Yisrael, become part of a community. And that's a strength, if you could join a kehillah, if you could become a part of the community. So Hillel says, don't separate yourself from the congregation. If people are preparing a shir to learn together, to daven together, to plan something together, a person shouldn't say, whatever you guys want is fine by me, just tell me, I'm with you on whatever you say. No, you're part of the congregation, so be a part of the discussion, give your input. And this is a key point also in a family. Very often your wives are going to come to you and say, what dress do you think I should wear tomorrow? What do you think? Should we send our son on this trip or not? And you're going to say, whatever you say is fine by me. Again, this stems from what we said earlier. You're so used to her talking to you about things that are trivial that everything suddenly becomes trivial. And you say, oh, whatever you want is fine. You don't want to give her the focus that we discussed earlier in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, no, don't separate yourself from the congregation. If there's something that has to be decided upon, don't just say whatever you guys decide is fine by me. Be a part of the discussion and a part of the decision. If everyone else is suffering, so Chazal tell us you're not allowed to separate yourself from the congregation. If there's a time of famine, of hunger, of sorrow, Chazal say, we each have two angels accompanying us. If a person participates with everyone else's feelings, the angels come and bless him and they say, he participated in their feelings of sorrow, he should merit to see when things go better for them. And if a person says, I'm okay, I don't know, the economy stinks, but I got my $3 million in the bank, I'm okay. So Chazal say, two angels that accompany a person put their hands on his head and they say, he did not participate in the sorrow of the congregation, he should not merit to see when things go better for them. We have to feel like we're a part of the crowd. And when we daven, our prayer should be reflective of that too. And this is an attitude. do I view myself as me, or am I getting accustomed to viewing myself as part of a greater whole? There's much more to be said. We're stopping really in the middle of the Mishnah, but we've gone over time. So we'll have to pick up over here with Hillel's instructions. We'll pick up here Bezachim next week.